Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 24th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Danra Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a busy week of news and things to talk about. We had a bunch of Sony news, some Xbox news, Embracer Group deciding they have too many company or not enough companies, so they need more. And, yeah, a bunch of other things that have happened here, along with the new Nintendo game getting announced. Maybe not for the platform you would expect, but there you go. Before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here with the big thing I've been playing is some Subnautica 2, which is out now on PC and Xbox in early access. And yeah, it is, you know, the newest Subnautica game where generally in these games, you are part of this human spaceship that crash lands on these random planets that all happen to be mostly water-based.
Yep.
From what we see. This one here, it seems like your crew was supposed to be going to maybe some other planet, from what I've read in it, and the ship ends up crashing into this other planet. I forget what the planet's called. But you kind of wake up on this submerged portion of the ship that, you know, you have to escape from and sort of get to another area. I think you launch the life pod from whatever remains of the ship that you're in. That then leads you to what is it? It malfunction itself. Like, I think it's parachuting down, then it malfunctions and you just crash into the water again. And so you're just left with the life pod as your sort of initial base of operations, you know, similar to how the other games have worked. But I think the big difference with this world is that it is a toxic world. They throw out some different elements like lead and cadmium, and I forget what the other one is as well. But it is sort of a toxic world that, you know, is not going to go well for you. Luckily, if you die, they just print you a new body. So there's a little bit of that going on as a means of not necessarily solving the issue, just more of mitigating the issues that you end up having, though. So far, I don't think that's played into the gameplay at all. It just seems to be a story issue, but you have an AI that is in your pod called Noah, N-O-A, that essentially gives you story and, you know, background information and all that kind of stuff. Generally, sends you on your missions to go find black boxes of where other people in the colony have crash landed and find their black boxes and see like what they were up to, why they aren't, you know, around, why they're missing, all that kind of stuff. You get a lot of interesting story out of it. You run into some people that are aware of the toxicity of this planet and are very pessimistic, and, you know, things that go on in these other like habitats that you find that do not go well. Much like the other games, you don't really ever find humans, especially early on. But yeah, where you're landing, you find there's this like big tree sort of landmass that you would think you would want to go to. But you are told in some of the audio logs you find that, you know, that's maybe not where you want to go, especially with some potential like hostile life forms or whatever is going on here. I've not gotten anywhere close to that. I've been, you know, exploring these other areas and kind of building out my underground base or underwater base right now with different pieces and such. I just got the ability to do rooms versus it just being all tunnels. So that's been fun to mess around with. And like the other games, you get a scanner that can, you know, scan creatures and materials and plants and such that you find to learn more about them. But also it's used for the habitat builder stuff. So that, you know, you find these other, you know, destroyed habitats, but you can at least scan things that will give you new, you know, just basic tables and chairs and such, but also machines that will be useful for what you need out of them. So I like have a processor that is sort of where you make, you know, ingots and some other like higher tier versions of items that you get early on, depending on what the crafting requirements are. I have a scanner that will let me scan for specific materials. Like right now, the thing I need is the lead. Which I've not seen anywhere so far. So that's been the thing I'm working on, though. Once I built that, it immediately drained all my power. It was at nighttime, and the only power source I have at the moment is solar panels, which even at night gives you a little bit of energy, but what I've got in that pod or in that home area is some of the basic machines, you know, the fabricator and all that, and some places store excess materials and such. It seems like what they're doing here, some pretty interesting stuff, along with the way they're doling out story and making the area kind of look really nice. Even on my newish PC, I've been able to get it to run pretty well for most of the tweaking I've done. And it still looks really nice, even on like lower settings, which I did when I was streaming it. And yeah, they kind of give you some, they kind of get you going earlier in this game versus the other two kind of being a little slower paced. You generally get the NOAA pinging you for, you know, updates fairly often. As I play, let's see, about 5 hours or so. And generally, like every 30 minutes or so, to point out a new place you should go and visit. Along the way, you'll run into a bunch of different kinds of creatures. You know, a lot of fish-type creatures, but also you get to some really interesting ones. Like the first predator you'll probably find is this one that is essentially a pair of twins that kind of fuse into one body when they are coming at you. Essentially, like, fuse all their organs together to form into, you know, one single body creature. When they're kind of just floating around, you can see like they're kind of two halves that are kind of just hanging out next to each other. Almost like a biplane kind of look. But I've run into some that are like more eel like that chase you around and all that. As well as there's like a big giant crab that has some big like coral or rock on its shell that gives you the idea that there must be something bigger and nastier that this thing's protecting itself from. I went to a different area and kind of ran into some shark-like creature that I found a few of that had me kind of darting between different habitats to kind of have some safety from it. But yeah, it's been pretty fun that been exploring and doing all that kind of fun stuff. So that's been nice. It has co-op in it. I've not checked that out, but they do also have cloud save stuff so that you can, I'm guessing, play on different machines and bring that around wherever you need to. A little more easily, I assume. They've also posted their early roadmap stuff for the game so far that has a lot of like quality of life stuff that they're planning for their first big updates. That'll be nice. And yeah, they do have the second big update will be focused on co-op. And they have some more expansion stuff for the future. Expand the world with new biomes, creatures, and all that kind of stuff. So that looks like it should be on good footing for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I'm trying to think what else they have that's kind of new. They do have like this. The other thing is that like you're not well equipped for this planet, so that you kind of get these genetic mutations that make you more suitable for dealing with this planet. It's like the first one you get in the opening area is sort of this one that lets you deal with the like underwater pressure better. Then I had one because like a lot of the food wasn't edible in my current state, so I had to get a genetic mutation that allows my stomach to handle that stuff. You know, like the cooked fish and all that. It seems like I want to get one for temperature control because I've gone to some warmer areas that is kind of freaking out about. So that seems like another one too that I'll eventually get. You kind of stick your hands in this weird, like, I don't know, egg sac plant. You kind of get the genetic mutation out of that. And along with that, you kind of get this, the ability to put these mods on yourself. They give you different bonuses, but the ones I have right now, basically just a like dash kind of move that lets you dodge, you know, enemy attacks and kind of just get around a little more quickly. And another one that's when I'm either closer to the seafloor, I swim faster, and I think I swim faster closer to the surface of the water. That's nice, but yeah, been enjoying that so far and looking forward to playing some more of that. So there's that. That is out now for $30 on a PC and I believe Xbox. Let's see, the next game I'm playing some more Sorrows. I've gotten to the second boss, but had a good run at it, but failed on that. But it didn't seem too complicated for what it was, so I'll have to make some more runs at that. Still enjoying that a lot. I played some Time Crisis on the PS5, the PS1 version specifically, that has gyro support on it, and that ends up working really well in the game. So yeah, it kind of comes with that turned on by default. I don't think there's really any other way to play it, though. The one issue that it has is that it's the controls it shows by default are the GunCon controls, because that was a game that used Namco's GunCon controller. They're sort of like gun controller. That was just for their games that has an A and B button on it, and you know, trigger and all that. And the way it controls on, you know, a DualSense is not laid out in this game. So I had to look up the manual, figure that out, and that's made more sense once I figured that out. I maybe remapped some stuff from there, because I think it's circle and R1 are the main buttons you're using, which use R1 to sort of duck behind cover and also reloads your gun. When you let go, you aim at, you know, enemies and shoot with the circle button. That ended up kind of really wearing out my hand, so I switched those to left trigger, right trigger. That made more sense there. For that, and I think it also uses triangle just to recalibrate the gyro on it. So, but yeah, there's a few different ways of playing it. There's a story mode, which has a decent amount of gameplay to it. I think it's, if you play through the whole thing, it's maybe like an hour or so long, not super long. It also has an extra like special mode. I forget what they called it. I think it's a console only version of or an extra mode that is like a branching path mode, essentially. I don't know what the what decides the paths are going on. Mm-hmm. It's maybe time or accuracy or something. But that one took not like maybe 20 minutes to beat. It was like three areas. Then it mm-hmm. shows you the branching paths you went for that. So I was like, okay, that's neat as like an extra thing. Mm-hmm. Then they have like a time attack mode that lets you just focus on the different stages and kind of play through them. Because along the way, since it's an arcade game, originally, you know, focuses on showing you how your time is comparing to like the record times, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So you're getting a lot of that. And as you finish up areas, it'll add more time to your timer. So you're mm-hmm. trying to, you know, finish the stuff before time runs out. Which isn't hard to complete most of these areas, but yeah, if you're being particularly slow, you will eventually run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been really fun to kind of jump in. It makes me hope that they use this setup to bring over, you know, the other Time Crisis games, the other Namco Lycon games, as well as maybe some of the what was it, Silent Scope 2, I think it was a PS2 launch title. That mm-hmm. would be really nice to have on this as well. I don't remember if that used any sort of light gun stuff, but I think you could just adapt it for that.
Mm.
There's a lot of like light guns on PS1 and PS2 that you could certainly adapt for this. It hopefully ends up being the case. Mm-hmm. If you don't have PS Plus Premium, you can pay $10 for it. That seems like a pretty good price for that game. Otherwise, it's included with PS Plus Premium.
Mm-hmm.
No achievements or trophies in this. Mm. I think all the Bandai Namco stuff has been trophy-free for a reason. I think they're the only company that hasn't had any trophies added to their games, so that's a bit of a mm-hmm. shame. But otherwise, it's a good game to play for, you know, short stretches of time.
Oh, yeah.
Some time to kill for that. And then, but yeah, that's been fun. And Income Beanie is the other game I've been playing some of. I think I'm through 4 days on this so far, and I'm really liking it at this point. It is definitely mm-hmm. more of an adventure game than any sort of like store management sim. It almost kind of reminds me of, what was it, Lake, that came out on pretty much everything in terms of that game kind of has enough simulation of, you know, delivering mail, especially being set in, I think, the 80s for that, and like having the trappings of that time for the tech and all that that you have access to,
mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, the achievements that it has definitely require multiple playthroughs, because there's a lot of little hidden things you may or may not find. Because you'll find a note, like, on the first night that somebody's lost a ring, and you can try and go look around for it. If not, you'll find a note the next day, somebody else found it. That's, like, one achievement that I missed. And there's other things in the game as well. So I'm dealing with, like, just checking out the newspaper every day. Finding different kind of things throughout the game. So I'm just like specifically selling specific things to people that may not necessarily look like they would be able to buy them. So yeah, there's a lot of like extra things that require some time, but I've been enjoying that so far, and hope to finish that up here in the near future. So that's been pretty much what I've been playing. How about you, Brandon?
As for me, I'm still playing that one secret game that I still can't talk about, at least not for, well, I won't say anything more than that, even though I really, really want to talk about it, because, God, it's so good. But, on top of that, I've also still been playing more Splatoon 3, and, you know, once again, And but there's just been like a glut of new players that are either really, really good or just absolutely terrible and don't know how to play the game. But I still love playing it. And honestly, when that spinoff comes out, I will be eagerly playing that as well. But yeah, so I've been doing that. And I did finally go back to Trails Beyond again because I had been wanting to get back to that, but it's just, we've had such a just a huge number of good games that have been coming out over the last couple months that, it's hard to make time for it. But I did finally get out of the first part. I'm now in the part where you're now like actively choosing between the three different storylines to play with. Obviously, there's Van and his people are still the main focus, but there's also another one where it's Rene Schwarzer and some of his people, doing stuff, and the other with Kevin, from the Gralsritter, who's also doing his thing with some of the people he's now kind of adopted into his little sort of circle of people. And again, still Trails, still good, still enjoy it. Yeah, until I can talk about that other game, that's pretty much it. Which sucks because I've been playing it so much, and it's like I have to bite my tongue because it's so good. But so, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch of stuff, including that game Brandon's been talking about. But anyway, here are the yeah, it's been a bunch of interesting things. Believe it or not, I have been playing Bluey and the Quest for the Gold Pen. What I did not know was that this is actually a port of a mobile game. And I gotta say, like, if this is a port of a mobile game, that mobile game was good. This game is actually pretty good. So basically, it plays like an episode, or the story is pretty much an episode of Bluey, and she and her sister are just drawing, and all of a sudden, their dad takes the gold pen away from them, and they can't use gold in any of their pictures. So as a result, the dad sort of plays the bad guy, and you have to chase him and his minions around all these storybook places that you created. And basically, what you do is in each of these levels, you're on a fetch quest to like find these items to unlock the path to the next place. There's like I think 10 levels or so. But yeah, it's supposed to be an easy platinum because every level you beat ends up, getting you a trophy. And there are all sorts of collectibles in these levels, and you don't actually have to collect them all. You only have to collect a certain number of them. And at the same time, like, there are so many extra ones. So if you want to go ahead and, go the extra mile and like 100% clear a level, that's totally up to you. But at the same time, if you do get enough of these items, your mom, who pretty much plays the gatekeeper, can like transport you to the next place. So, as I mentioned, this game is really, really good, but we didn't give it that high of a rating on Smashpad. Alex can attest to it. In fact, he's the one that, reviewed the game and told me about this problem. Once you get past level 5, at least on the PlayStation 5, and you put the game on sleep mode at any time, or you let it idle, or you turn your PS5 off, when you go back to the game, the game will sort of like reset itself, and it'll put you back at the beginning of level 5. So, the only way to actually get through it all, and get the platinum if you want, is to raw dog the game and like, just beat it. You can beat it in one sitting. Like it is easy enough and short enough, but a lot of these things can get pretty tedious. And kids these days will only play for a few minutes, whether it's by choice or by not. And at the same time, like, having this progress bug is definitely an issue because you obviously don't want to be doing that same thing over and over. Now, as far as we know, this is only affecting the PS5 version. Miles over at Temple of Geek reviewed it for But Why Though, and he played it on Switch and saw no problems. I haven't heard anything on Xbox, and I'm sure mobile is fine. So as far as we know, it's a PS5 issue. I have not seen any updates for it yet, although we did report it to the PR company. So yeah, if you are going to play this game, get it on anything but the PS5. Because it's actually really, really cool. I enjoyed it a lot, and there are some parts that are, nice and challenging. And I think it is a nice introduction to, any kids in your family who are into games or you want to get into games, and maybe you don't have access to a Nintendo game, or like if I were raising a kid, I would have them play this over a game like a Minecraft or anything like that. But yeah. It's definitely a fun one. The other one that I got to play and finish is Bubsy 4D. And yeah, this game is I'm trying to remember the developer, right? Like right now they escaped me. Oh, Fabrez. And they also came out with Demon Tides earlier this year, which is an exquisite 3D platformer, and Bubsy 4D is very much like it. In fact, I would call it a clone, but I can't really call it a clone because they were developed by the same people. And the thing about this game is that this is probably the first Bubsy that's actually good. In fact, the way you control him is pretty phenomenal, especially like when you're comparing it side by side to a game like Mario Odyssey. Like the platforming just works. There are different ways to do all sorts of hacky jumps, and even though the game is short, and let me tell you, this game is short. There are only three worlds with five levels each, meaning there are only 15 levels in the game. But even though it doesn't take long to finish it at all, the real fun in this game is actually in the speed running. If you're able to like beat every level within a certain time, you get this other item that is pretty much just bragging rights. So it's very much like getting all the medals in the Star Fox, but it's still really, really fun. As far as the way you move Bubsy, Bubsy has a typical jump. He has a pounce move that is only his only real way of attacking. He also has the ability to float for a little bit, and then the pounce also acts as another farther jump. So, you can go ahead and try to combine different ways to use these things. And if you pounce on something like a balloon, that actually resets your jump. So you can actually jump higher and farther or wherever you need to go. So I thought that's a pretty cool mechanic. As I mentioned, the game is short, so that's definitely going to be an issue to people. But also it's $20. $20 for a really good platformer is, solid work. And if anything, this is sort of a introduction to how good Fabrez is as a 3D platforming developer. Like I said, Demon Tides came out earlier this year, and that game is lengthy. That is almost a 30-hour game. Right now, it's only available on PC. It's coming out on Switch soon, and I definitely look forward to getting my hands on that. But yeah, this is a solid platformer. I don't want to say Bubsy is back because Bubsy has always been around. It's never been good. But I think the punchline is the fact that this game is actually good and enjoyable. So definitely not a waste of time there. If anything, I do feel like the levels are generic and don't really have any sense of real sense or variety to what to anything happening in the story. But if you enjoy fourth wall breaking and deadpan humor with some sarcasm, there's definitely a lot to really enjoy with Bubsy. I am glad that we got Kayla to review it, who is a Bubsy super fan. I didn't know those exist, but she really loved her time with it, and I'm glad we gave her the chance to review it. Moving on, I've also been playing a little bit more of Invincible VS or Invincible Versus, and yeah, this game is fantastic. If you've played Killer Instinct, it's very much like that. It has a little bit of Killer Instinct's DNA along with Mortal Kombat, which makes sense because if you've seen an episode of Invincible, it is a very brutal show, and it's a video game that's just as brutal. Like you can have overkills that pretty much just, pretty much make the your opponent explode. You can behead them with the various moves that you have. Overall, it feels good. It's also friendly to newcomers or people who are not used to fighting games, because if you want, you can go ahead and mash the square button to do various combos. But at the end of the day, if you're someone that actually spends the time to get good at this game, like you can become a master at it. And the developers definitely wanted to make this a EVO worthy game, and I definitely think they'll be on their way there. Also, the game is also at a low price, and they're seeing continuing updates. So, all the more power to them there. I've also played a little bit of Table Flip Simulator. That game also came out this week. It is an indie game that is just like it's all sorts of crazy. So basically, the plot here is you go to work on your birthday, and your boss makes you work on your birthday and makes you do all sorts of like dumb stuff. So you end up getting mad, breaking all of the portraits of your boss at the grocery store, or the the cafe, wherever you end up working, because every level is working at a different place. And then as soon as you finish the main objectives in each level, you flip your table over. That's why it's called Table Flip Simulator. And the epic silliness that ensues is just absolutely hilarious. This is another game with an indie platinum that, or with an easy platinum that you can definitely really enjoy. So that one's also really fun. Now, my crown jewel right now, I am really enjoying this game, is The Adventures of Elliot prologue demo. That game is going to come out sometime next month. And yeah, as someone that did not really put that much time in the initial demo release on the Switch 2, I really enjoyed what I played out of The Adventures of Elliot demo. So basically, you use this well-known adventurer named Elliot. You learn a little bit about him, but this demo is really about just getting your feet wet with everything. This game is made by Team Asano, so you definitely have the awesome HD 2D look. But this game is like not really, it's not really a JRPG per se. It's more along the lines of an action adventure, much like Zelda. Primarily because like there isn't really any leveling up. You do collect a lot of loot that can definitely increase your abilities. But at the same time, all of the enemies that you fight in the action-based combat system are very much sponges where you just continue to inflict damage however way you do it, and it doesn't really like you're there is no leveling, so you don't have to worry about being over or under leveled as long as you're doing the right amount of damage with whatever weapons you have, and you have a lot of them. You have a sword, you have a spear, you have a bow and arrow, you have bombs, and all of these things will also help you in the overworld. There are some shrine-like dungeons where you can get their versions of pieces of heart. Like, yeah, this game is very much a Square Enix take on Zelda, and at the same time, it's pretty approachable too. Like, there is an easy mode if you want to, just swing by things. But yeah, this demo took me over 3 hours to finish, and a lot of people did it in less than an hour. But I explored as much as I could, and even though I took 3 hours and finished the demo, there is still much more to go with this. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. They're playing around with time travel, and that's really nice. And the one thing that really makes this different is it's kind of like, again, I'm going to bring it up again, Zelda, where you do have a companion where, in games like Skyward Sword, like your sword is your companion and they'll talk to you. In Elliot, you have this pendant that was blessed by the princess of the region that you're in, and it allows her to talk to you throughout the entire game. And the best thing is you don't have to flip through mindless dialogue. Like, she is actually talking as you do things. Does she get annoying? Yes. Like, you don't really need to have someone, talk about a treasure chest that's nearby or the contents within it. But at the same time, if you don't see the chest, like, it'll help in that regard. And she the voice actress for this character, for the princess, does a really good job doing it too. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm done with it, and I definitely hope to get this into my hands soon, because I definitely plan on reviewing it when we get to it. So yeah, we can definitely move on. And the funny thing is, we're gonna move on by talking about this game. So however you want to do it, Chris.
Yeah. Let's get to some news. And yeah, first up, in case you didn't know, the prologue demo is out now for The Adventures of Elliot, The Millennium Tales, which is on pretty much everything at this point. And the save data can carry over to the full game. I think there's a couple caveats, because there's like some parts of it that you can't access for that first area. But as long as you have some save data from it, you can bring that over to the main game and get whatever bonuses come with that. So you can at least check it out for a little bit. I played that first demo they put out. Seemed like a pretty good time. So yeah, that's out. What is that? I think it's June 18th. So not too far away. I did notice that it's streamable on the PlayStation Portal, unlike Dragon Quest III remastered. So Square Enix just pinging back and forth between what they allow to be streamed through the cloud. So that's fun to see. But yeah, that's available now on everything. And yeah, we got some Nintendo news. They announced a new game that will be out May 28th called Picto Nico. Free to start mobile game, as they call it here for iOS and Android. Essentially uses pictures from your photo gallery to play kind of Mario or WarioWare-esque kind of games, mini games to it, which they, you know, sell more packs of mini games to play with them. I think the max is up to like 13 or 15 bucks, something like that. For that. But yeah, if you don't want to share pictures with this thing, then you know, you can just move on and try something else. Especially if you're not necessarily something that takes a ton of pictures either, from the way it seems that this thing works. So yeah.
So are these like WarioWare kind of games that you're putting in here? I never actually watched the trailer yet, so.
It seems like that.
Yeah, I hope they have a good sensor. We'll say that.
It seems like you pick the photos you're including in it. From your
I get role. That, but you know, people picked a lot of weird things. So.
And I would assume if you're going to do that, you're not playing it out in public, but who knows. But yeah, that's something you can check out here later this week.
Yeah, jokes aside, Nintendo always finds a way to make their mobile games like at least interesting enough for you want to download and try for about 15 minutes. I remember Miitomo, even though I've never played a Tomodachi game, I remember like enjoying my time with that. I've played a lot of Fire Emblem Heroes, a lot of Animal Crossing. So yeah, hopefully this, you know, follows that formula. I haven't really seen much here regarding it's free to start, so there's definitely going to be some in-game purchases. And yeah, the main thing with mobile games is that they need to make money, so it's going to be interesting seeing how they do it here.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the new Nintendo game that you can check out. Ignore that Yoshi game, this is the new one. Let's see. Yeah, next week will be the start of a Summer Game Fest. And Sony announced that they are going to be holding a State of Play on Tuesday, June 2nd at, let's see, 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and then the corresponding times from around the world. So like in Japan, it seems like it'll be at 6 a.m. for those people, but they say it'll be over 60 minutes of news and announcements, with the featured game being Wolverine. Insomniac is definitely hyped up that they're going to be showing up more off about their game, so that's cool to see. Yeah, that's out September 15th, so might as well start showing some of it now that you're less than 4 months away from that. And it seems like if you have an Alamo Drafthouse near you, they may be selling tickets for that, free tickets, but tickets in some of those locations to tune in and watch this. That's the way you want to go with things. So,
yeah, I didn't see this announcement until 10 hours after it was announced. And at least in my area, they're gone. So, yeah.
Yeah. So there is that. So that'll be fun to see. And yeah, they've probably got some fun stuff that we'll find out with this whole show. Trying to think what else they may be working on. Like, there's some chatter that Fair Games may be getting a name change, and then may end up being something that's closer to being shown off than you might expect. But yeah, I'm not sure what else they have in the works right now. But anything here you would like to see? First party or third party, Brandon?
Well, obviously, I know we're getting that Wolverine one, and I absolutely want to see that. I honestly would not mind seeing more of Exodus. I know that game's not coming out until next year, but the archetype, they've been slowly but surely sort of out little bits and pieces every week just to let people get a taste of everything, and I've been loving what I've been seeing. I'd also like to see a bit more of Blood of Dawnwalker, because God, that game looks amazing, and I really would love to play it. And yeah, that's just like off the top of my head. I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of other stuff they're going to show.
Yeah, how about you, Danrub?
Yeah, it's really tough to stay, I say. I mean, obviously I'm a huge PlayStation fan, but they really haven't left much for me to look forward to, especially considering, what they've come out with lately. I know Saros was definitely a game to talk about, but yeah, we just don't know what's really coming, and we've been left in the dark. All we've been hearing lately out of PlayStation are things like price increases and studio closures. We're going to talk about another, cancellation later, and it's just, it's upsetting. At the end of the day, like, I'm going to watch it like a fan and, hope that there is something good to show this year. But all I can really think about right now are things like third-party announcements. We already know Grand Theft Auto is going to be the big thing this fall. But aside from that, I don't really know what else to look forward to. Brandon already talked about, Blood of Dawnwalker. There was already a huge feature in Game Informer about that, so I don't even know how much more we can talk about. But yeah, I am hoping that maybe we see more of whatever is going to be shown on Dragon Quest Day, to on and have it be put on State of Play, because I feel like it's always good to talk about more Dragon Quest in events like these. Hopefully it's Dragon Quest 12. I don't know, but I'll just say I'm looking forward to it, but I don't really want to say too much about like what's going to come out, because at the end of the day, I just want something nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to look at some upcoming releases that let me see. Yeah, I think Phantom Blade Zero will probably see here. Because that's out September 9th, so another one that's not too far away. Maybe we'll see the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection 2. That could be something that we see at some point here. Let me see. Yeah, maybe get a date for Onimusha, because that's out this year. Yeah, Control Resident is another game that's, I think they've had on one of these shows. I don't know if it was the State of Play or one of the Summer Game Fest things. That could also show up there as well. There's like the new Tomb Raider game, Legacy of Atlantis. Yeah, let's see. Star Wars Galactic Racer, we already got a date for. Yeah, Mega Man Dual Overrides next year. If that's an early game, that might be something that gets a date at one of these shows. There's another Tomb Raider game, Catalyst, that's out next year as well. But yeah, there's some definitely some interesting stuff. As for so many things, I think we can definitely probably see at least one or two more games getting shown here. Maybe stuff that is out next year, something like that. I know we had the God of War collection was announced. That's probably not far enough along to be worth showing. But maybe there's something else. I know there's the supposedly the Freya game. Maybe that's far enough along to start showing. But yeah, definitely some nice bit of intrigue, because we've got a little bit of a lull in some of these studios to see what their next thing is. So yeah. That looks like that should be a fun show. But yeah, we got news here out of Bungie, that's basically they are ending active development of Destiny 2 as of June 9th, with the final big updates, as they call it. Trying to see if there was information on exactly what that one, yeah, Moment of Triumph is what they're calling it. That has, let me see. Yeah, I guess it's just doing a lot of reflection on, big moment things you've done, and all that kind of stuff. That seems like a nice thing. So yeah. But yeah, it's seems like they are done working on this, because they've kind of been winding down on development for a while, after they put out the final shape. That was sort of their big conclusion to the big storyline stuff they've been doing in Destiny 2. They've been doing more smaller story update stuff for that. On a bit more of a more often cadence, more shorter cadence release schedule there. That's, yeah, it seems like it's been doing all right, but probably not enough to keep going at the pace that they've been going. It seems like the expectation that has been going around is that they may start laying people off when this update comes out, because they don't have another project in the works just yet, but maybe something will happen on that front between now and then.
Yeah, I'm sure some of them will probably be transferred over to Marathon, but
yeah,
well,
that game seems to be doing pretty decently, so that'll be fun. They put out a big post on Marathon, basically a lot of their plans for future updates, and they seem to be having a lot of ideas for ways to kind of offer ways to play for various types of people that are playing it. So like the sickos can have their sicko mode, but also maybe have some more PvE type stuff for the people that don't necessarily have the time to fully dive into that game. Maybe have some more lower stakes stuff in there as well, which all sounds like pretty good time there. That's I think it will definitely get me more into that game. But
it's really unfortunate stuff. Like, the main thing here for me is that, and again, I'm not even like into the games that Bungie makes, but I do know that Destiny is not Marathon. And, you know, it's actually really impressive that Marathon took off the way it did. And, you know, Bungie definitely deserves the flowers to make that happen, because that's definitely some hard work. It's a very different game. That being said, like, a lot of the changes happening to Marathon are, you know, for the purpose of making it more. Yeah, it's definitely going to be for the wider market. But at the end of the day, it also loses some of the identity that it had. Granted, it's for the greater good, but I do know a few people who are, you know, leaving Marathon because of these changes. And it's really sad that, you know, Destiny 2 technically isn't even done. You know, they're canceling a lot of the stuff that we know was planned for. And, you know, along with that comes the layoffs. And, like, it's really unfortunate, especially, you know, being backed by PlayStation. Like, you thought out of all the companies, you know, trying to eat each other up, this is one that would definitely help. But it's not. Like, you know, they use Bungie's expertise to, you know, cancel the multiplayer from The Last of Us. And you would think that expertise would lead to something, but no, we're seeing people get laid off anyway. So it's a really unfortunate situation. We're seeing Marathon change to something that it might not be. Like, they haven't really been known for PvE, and all of a sudden, like, they're having it. And at the same time, like, we don't know if there'll be a Destiny 3, because it's constantly been rejected. So I don't know. It's news that doesn't sit well with me, but at the same time, it doesn't surprise me either. And that's really the unfortunate.
Yeah. And, despite the way that it seems like people are talking about it, Destiny 2 is not being shut down. They are going to keep it playable for people for a long time. Like, I think the original Destiny is still plenty playable. It's just not the main thing that they've been working on. But they've had a pretty good run with this, these two games over the last 12 years. That's a lot better than a lot of games end up getting. For this style of game, especially when it was a paid game for most of its existence. They've definitely been running into tech issues that have caused them to have to vault these expansions to keep the rest of the game playable. That's, you know, not a great way to have to handle that stuff. It would be nice if there would be a way to make all of that playable in some form. But it seems like that engine that they've been working on for this game has just kind of reached its limits. So maybe they do get some sort of new Destiny game in the works, or something else in the works that will keep them whole. But yeah, we'll see where that ends up going for Bungie. But yeah, I don't know if you have anything else to add, Brandon.
No, not really.
All right. But yeah, with that, we do have some other interesting dev news. Devolver Digital ends up being the first publisher to blink at the thought of releasing a game right around Mina the Hollower. They have pushed their game Dark Scrolls from May 28th to June 22nd.
Yeah, I don't blame them, because I have a feeling Mina's going to clean up that week.
Yeah. And they had a fun, cheeky announcement saying, you know, when we said we were releasing Devolver Digital and Doinksoft's Dark Scrolls on May 28th for PC and Switch, you know, the super rad, pixelated, fantasy-themed action platform that fuses shmup-style chaos with roguelite progression, we actually meant June 22nd. It's nothing to do with our friends at Yacht Games, Yacht Club Games, announcing that Mina the Hollower would be launching a day later on May 29th. Nothing at all.
Yeah, this is a dope move. You know, like Brandon said, Mina is going to clean up. And, like, you know, generally, I would say that it's nothing to worry about. But at the same time, yeah, I totally understand the whole look of the Game Boy graphics. Although, like, one is a 2D side-scroller and Mina is not. But at the same time, Mina is a game that's over 30 hours. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, that will take up a lot of the time here. And you don't want to buy a game and not play it, right? So hopefully, you know, this June spot is a good spot for them. At the same time, it's like it's always funny seeing people move out for a another game and you know, actually mean it, and I think they actually do. So
yeah, that game still looking pretty good.
Absolutely,
but yeah, people get a little more time to wait on that one and be able to play Mina the Hollower, 007 First Light, whatever is coming out this week that interests them. Instead, I'm gonna see what else is this week. Blue's Quest for the Gold Pen, My Little Puppy, or I think that might get delayed. But yeah, there's a couple other things there, but yeah, that's one you have to wait on, as Devolver Digital just doesn't want that smoke, so there you go. And yeah, there was another game that was going to come out this week as well, Wandering Sword. This was supposed to be out, I think, May 28th as well. And they said, you know what, we're also going to delay the game, but also we're going to delay it to January 21st, 2027. So I don't think it had anything to do with Mina the Hollower. It just seemed like they needed more time to get it out and ready for launch. And now they've also said that I think it was just going to be PS5 and PC for launch. But now the Switch 2 and Switch versions that they were planning to launch later are going to be at launch that day. And there's also an Xbox version that will also be out at launch. So I'm guessing you might also be getting those versions ready, or also just decide to push it, not have multiple launches and just focus on one on all the platforms. Probably makes sense, because yeah, this is a Wuxia RPG that has been in the works for a while now, and you know, kind of has the HD 2D look to it. So, but I think the combat style is more of a strategy RPG, kind of grid based kind of thing. So a little bit different there, but otherwise, the style is not too different from a lot of the Square Enix stuff these days. Maybe that's what they're doing. Dragon Quest 12, is they're making it look like this. Doing HD 2D for everything.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that one you have to wait until early next year. That might be a better time for that game.
But yeah,
there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to, or no, we got to a bunch of date stuff here. Anything you're interested in, Brandon?
Well, Dark Scrolls definitely looks interesting, but, you know, Mina comes out that week, so that's pretty much going to be my focus there. But Dark Scrolls does look pretty neat, though.
Yeah. Well, that one got delayed.
Yeah.
You don't have to choose.
Yeah. But, not really.
How about you, Danrib?
Yeah, none of these really tickle my fancy here. You know, we talked about Adventures of Elliot. I am definitely looking forward to that game. But aside from that, it's just smooth sailing for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some industry news. And we talked about Subnautica hitting 2 million copies sold in its first 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Now we know in its first week it hit 4 million copies sold, which is, yeah, still a lot. That is a great first week for a game that's whose publisher did not really want it to come out anytime soon. Tried everything they could, even asking AI to help them stop it. And instead, they've got a very successful game on their hands. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. That's great to see. So
yeah, they had to get that, and it basically forced Krafton to give them that bonus. So
yeah, they will have to whenever that needs to be doled out.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that the game's doing well.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's it's a fun game and well worth checking out. But yeah, we got Hasbro here, who's coming off of Baldur's Gate 3 doing incredibly well, and they, you know, them and Larian decided to not work on a Baldur's Gate 4.
Mm-hmm.
So Wizards of the Coast is like, fine, we'll do our own D&D game. And they hired the studio Giant Skull, which was founded by Respawn veteran Stig Asmussen, who also directed God of War 3, to work on this new D&D game. And that was less than a year ago for that announcement, last June, so almost a year. But they've canceled it since then.
Mm.
They're working on an action-adventure game set in the Dungeons & Dragons universe, which they deemed a definitive moment in both companies' gaming ambitions. But it seems like Wizards of the Coast decided, we don't think this is going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So now Wizard of the Coast is left with not much else going on gaming wise.
Mm.
So that's a great time for them.
Yeah.
Always making the best decisions for D&D.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, Stig has a statement here basically saying like things are good at Giant Skull right now. So I don't think they're in any financial trouble just yet. I assume Wizard of the Coast pay whatever they had to pay to get out of this deal and move on. So that luckily it doesn't seem like they are under threat of shutting down. So hopefully that stays the case for that. So we'll see. But yeah, so there you go. fun times for Hasbro.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Then we got some Sony news. Some more Sony news. Seems like they are done bringing their single-player games to PC, as Herman Holst has told staff in a town hall earlier this week. Basically seems like with the PlayStation 6 on the horizon at some point in the next couple years, they are no longer going to be putting their games on PC, at least the single player stuff. The live service stuff will still continue to be coming to PC for the time being. And sort of pulled back to kind of, you know, reinvest in exclusivity for their platform, which makes sense for the way they've been running things for a while. 'Cause it adds, you know, extra work for the studios that probably spend some of their time working more on updating those games, work well on PC, and yeah, now they can just fully invest in whatever PS5 and PS6 work that they're working on for the time being. So, yeah, making the move that Xbox may end up making as well at some point. But Xbox, you know, they own Windows and the Xbox, so they have the more trouble there trying to pull back on anything. But yeah, it seems like a probably not a big deal for the PC audience as well, because they've not really bought much of their PC offerings that we've seen. So Sony doesn't seem to consider that a huge loss at this point. So yeah, but yeah, there you go. I don't know if you, do you have anything to add on that.
Honestly, let's be honest. On the one hand, I kind of saw it coming, but it still kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But like they're kind of going all in on the on exclusivity going forward. So, you know, the fact that they sort of decided to just, you know, drop the PC part doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah, it's a move that was pretty much long rumored. You know, we've heard this for a bit, and it's good to see it. If not really good to see it official, but you know, it's at least we know now, right? And yeah, like at the end of the day, you know, you do want to see more games come to more consoles, but in regards to, you know, a company like PlayStation, who, you know, you would think they're at the top of their game. If you want to stay in the console business, you need to have your exclusives out. Like, you know, like, yeah, like the PC gaming bit is definitely a huge audience. But at the end of the day, like, PlayStation is building a brand that has, you know, it's sort of lost value. It's like, if you're not Naughty Dog, it's like, who cares, right? Like, Star Ocean has came and went. Obviously, it's a good game, but we're not really hearing much as far as its success in sales. I feel like Ghost of Yote kind of went that direction too, but also Ghost of Tsushima sold really, really well on both PC and PlayStation. So there's that. But yeah, you know, if you want to continue to sell your boxes, you need to have a reason to do that. And if you're having people and PC players are patient, they will wait 5 years for your game to come out. They will wait 10 years. So, you know, if you want to give them a reason to get your system, you got to have those exclusives. So I totally get it. Mm. But yeah, at the end of the day, I still want to see more output from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the one part of the Sony news for this week. Mm-hmm. The next one here, they are raising prices on the 1 month and 3 month tiers on their PlayStation Plus offerings. Mm-hmm. So it seems like for Essential, it's going up from $9.99 to $10.99. Extra, it's going from $14.99 to $16.99. And premium is $17.99 going up to $19.99.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 month is going up. Let's see, Essential going up $3 to $27.99. Extras going up $4 to $43.99. And premium is going up $5 to $54.99. Mm-hmm. I don't think you really should be paying 1 month or 3 month unless you just want to spend, you know, play multiplayer stuff or whatever for a short bit. Otherwise, the year is kind of the best value of that, and they're not adjusting any of those prices, it seems like. I think PS Plus Premium is still, what is it? I think it's $170, which is a pretty good value for what it is compared to like Game Pass that does not offer any yearly discount stuff. That's like $270 something if you just keep the monthly going for the whole year. You know, a good $100 more. Yeah, it's $160 for PlayStation Plus Premium for a full year, whereas if you just want extra, that seems to be a pretty decent value as well. Essential is $80, which is definitely more than it used to be. But you know, you get the bare minimum there. The monthly, I don't think it's a great value outside of just 1 month here and there, which this price just doesn't really change that much. But yeah.
Yeah. The PS Plus Essential and all those, you know, tiers, it's something I have, but it primarily is because I keep forgetting to cancel it and I don't remember when it ever renews. And, you know, that's my own fault. I fell into the pit that way. But at the same time, I do see some worth to it because I do play games on stream via the portal. So and I do find that really useful when I want to, especially since my portal for some reason isn't the best at, you know, actually connecting to my PS5 through remote play. So being able to play a lot of these games via streaming is nice. And part of it is even like our review codes show up as streaming media. So that's definitely a plus. But yeah, like I only have it because I keep forgetting to unsubscribe. And then the other thing is, like, you know, you're talking about the various deals compared to Xbox. At least when I used to subscribe to Xbox Game Pass, I used to make use of this discounted CD keys. I don't know if they still do that anymore, but that was the way I used to do it.
Yeah. You end up having to go through a lot of side avenues to get it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
For that, but they've killed a lot of that stuff since then.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when if you're using like Microsoft Rewards or whatever to get discounts on that. But yeah. That kind of thing is still there. But yeah, that's your second of Sony news here. And the last one here is that Sony, much like Nintendo, is being sued for alleged, what are they called, double recovery windfall from tariff refunds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Sony has even gotten a refund from the federal government yet, but they have been sued by customers in California, alleging the company is set to obtain a double recovery windfall as a result of the Trump administration's IEEPA tariff refunds. We'll see if this ends up going anywhere. I don't know that the value you would get out of this as like a potential like class action suits would really be all that much.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I think the only price increases they've really done have been on the hardware end. And, you know, for most people that they pay that once and then move on. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to classify this as a nationwide class suit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But, yeah, we'll see if this ends up going anywhere, much like the Nintendo lawsuits. But for now, those two are dealing with this, and I assume somebody will be going after Xbox. Maybe people don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured you might as well go after them because, you know, Microsoft has plenty of money to throw around.
Yep.
I might as well use that to go to this next story here. Microsoft is paying $250 million to settle a lawsuit over the Activision Blizzard acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, this involves a lawsuit from a Swedish pension fund claiming that the $69 billion that Microsoft paid to acquire Activision Blizzard was actually too low. They sued Activision Blizzard and its CEO Bobby Kotick, claiming the deal was rushed to avoid fallout for the sexual misconduct scandal the company was embroiled in at the time.
Yeah.
To which Microsoft said, we have plenty of money, we'll pay you off for this, and paid off a settlement of $250 million.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of money. So yeah, and I guess Bobby Kotick and his lawyer have basically thrown a fit over this. Part of the filing here from Kotick's lawyer says Mr. Kotick intends to shine a light on the gross misconduct of the activists who invented the false narrative of misconduct at Activision and to expose the relationship between those activists and AP7, which is the Swedish pension fund here. The courts and the public should be aware of the abuse of legal process through which AP7 regulators and union activists brought false and wholly unsubstantiated claims against Activision and Mr. Kotick.
Mm-hmm.
So while Microsoft is like, here, take this money and go away, Bobby Kotick seems to want to fight this thing, and good luck with him on that. He's claimed people are lied about the sexual assault stuff. And it's like, sure, if that's the way you want to go ahead and try and claim there's a bunch of false flag attacks on your company.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a lot of smoke that there's no way there wasn't any real truth to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, through the settlement, you could absolve yourself of any actual blame on that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Bobby Kotick doesn't have plenty of money anyway, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go.
I thought we would be able to now that he was gone from Activision, we would never have to hear about him again, but.
Nope.
No. He is like a polyp on the ass of the gaming world. He just will not go away.
Yeah. But yeah, if you want him to go away, you could maybe use this new Xbox feedback portal that they have set up to voice your top request for the Xbox whatever admins to collect and send to the mm-hmm. tech teams and whatnot for things they want the Xbox team to be, you know, updating on Xbox and the way the company should be run and all that. Mm-hmm. I think they've had one of these things set up in the past. But the top stuff here is a lot of things you would expect, but also they don't need to be told this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What this means. Like the top one here is exclusives. Xbox was built off of great game exclusives. You cannot sell any consoles without a reason to buy the console compared to your competition, or even sending your temple games over to your competitor. All caps, bring them back, please. Like, that one has 17,000 upvotes. The second one is make online multiplayer free to access.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Online multiplayer availability for all games across all generations of Xbox should be free. And mm-hmm. all the features of Game Pass into one subscription for $9.99 like Xbox Gold back in the day. Yeah, they'll definitely take a loss on that. The multiplayer is stuff they might do free, but they're definitely not going to be like, make all your subscriptions $10 a month. That's it.
And this is the problem with open user feedback. Like, yeah, there are some times where a company will take a hit. But the problem with user feedback is that the vast majority of it is going to be ways to make your product cheaper. Guess what, folks? That doesn't make your company money. So, yeah, people need to realize that.
Yeah. There's one here. It's like, do more of the backwards compatibility stuff.
Mm-hmm.
An Xbox Game Pass family plan, which, like, that's something I think they thought about doing or worked on. There's one here that says they are doing it. Playtime will be displayed in total hours instead of days, because I think it would roll over if you hit over 24 hours on a thing. It would be, like, one day, 2 hours, whatever. It's, like, that's literally something they can do real quick, so they're supposed to measure, like, yeah, we're doing this. Okay. Is that something? I don't know. Maybe it's something they needed to be told. I don't know. One here, it's like, bring Xbox avatars back. And it's like, buddy, we're long past that. One here for allowing disc-based games to be played in Project Helix.
Mm-hmm.
One to just come back to Brazil, pay more attention to us.
Mm-hmm.
And one for HDR dashboards, that's something they could probably actually work on. One for, like, Arabic localization. Please remove ads from the home screen. They're not going to do that. Lower the price of the systems. They're not going to do that. You know, a lot of the stuff is either things that they probably already have on a list.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one. Cancel PS5 games. Bring exclusives back now. Like, yeah, they're definitely going to do that. So, yeah. It's got, you know, one of those things where, like, they probably already have most of the stuff on their list of things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that they're, you know, necessarily going to act on these. But then they can go back to this and be like, hey, we've listened to you. We are going to go back to exclusives. But yeah. Well, there you go. There's your Xbox news for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a trip over to the Embracer Group, because they've decided that having three companies is too few.
Yeah.
They're splitting up one of their companies into two companies, so they have four companies now under the Embracer Group umbrella. So they are spinning off Fellowship Entertainment. That means, they have Fellowship Entertainment, Coffee Stain and Friends, Asmodee, and Embracer. So I think this means all the, Fellowship Entertainment is being positioned as an IP-led entertainment company built around game development, publishing, and licensing. The spinoff will become the custodian of major properties such as Darksiders, Dead Island, Kingdom Come Deliverance, Metro, Remnant, The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, Tomb Raider, and others. I'm like, if you're Fellowship Entertainment, should just be Lord of the Rings stuff. But I don't. Again, that's why this stuff is so stupid. But yeah, their note to investors, they said the separation will provide sharper management focus and clearer accountability. We'll have four times the managers of these four different entities. I don't know. They're dealing with the fallout of buying up too many companies, too many properties, too many things to have to manage, and now have to, in this time where everybody is downsizing to some degree, they have the most shit to try to slim down and downsize and do whatever. So, yeah. The Fellowship Entertainment has these studios: 4A Games, Crystal Dynamics, Dambuster Studios, Dark Horse Media, Eidos Montreal, Fish Labs, Flying Wild Hog Studios, Gunfire Games, Middle Earth Enterprises, Red Octane Games, and Warhorse Studios. Fellowship will also create a new publishing group that will include employees from PlayOn, parent company of Kingdom Come publisher Deep Silver. They're tied into that. Embracer will remain the home of notable studios, businesses including Aspyr, Beamdog, Crazy Labs, Deca, Demiurge, DPI Merchandising, Limited Run Games, Milestone, PlayOn Partners, PlayOn Pictures, THQ Nordic, that itself has 35 studios and subsidiaries, Tripwire and Vertigo Games. And that one keeps the franchises Arizona Sunshine, Biomutant, Destroy All Humans, Desperados, Gothic, Killing Floor, Kingdom of Amalur, MX vs. ATV, Reanimal, Ride, Screamer, Titan Quest, Wreckfest, and others. So you can memorize all that. You can keep that all under control. I don't know. Embracer Group is spinning wildly out of control. Maybe they'll just sell one of these entities off. I don't know. But that's where Embracer Group is at. Here in the year 2026, we'll see where they go next. But yeah, we're going to end here with one story of a company that may be worse than all the others we've talked about. Valnet, who owns many gaming sites.
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, they own Polygon now, Game Rants. I guess they own Open Critic, though. That must be easy because there's nobody to do anything there. But for the site runs, Collider and a dozen more gaming technology and lifestyle websites is known for not paying its people well. They found a way to pay them even less, as they've asked people to sign new contracts at the Gamer, at least right now, as of May 21st. That's threatened to break new ground when it comes to this sort of exploitation in the gaming media space. Before, I think you just got paid a flat rate per article, and if it somehow broke out and did really well in terms of views, you would get a bonus on top of that. They've said, what if we don't give you a flat rate for writing new articles? Instead, they would reward top performing articles. But based on the details here, the performance structure would also result in writers not being paid at all, if their articles do not meet a minimum threshold of views. So yeah, that's kind of the thing that they're doing here. Yeah, we got this stuff out of a freelancer, and I think currently working mostly at Game Guides, I think it is, Lex Luddy, saying that, yeah, they issued new contracts to writers at The Gamer, instituting a minimum article viewership threshold for payment. Most writers already have pay tied to article performance, but this new system would mean that if a piece didn't get, you know, X number of clicks, you wouldn't be paid for it. Pay-per-view bonuses in the previous contracts were additive to base pay. These new contracts will see pay based solely on viewership, where you need a minimum to get any money, which is, you know, a real bad way with the way things are going with SEO. Because Google's system kind of just whittles the chances that, you know, anything becomes big purely through there. Yeah, it seems like the management for people at The Gamer were not included in on this before they were sent out. So, Valnet's management kind of went over the heads of the management at The Gamer.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, after a day-long revolt in the company's Slack, many of The Gamer's permalance staff believe that the issuing of these contracts are a form of soft layoffs, as most people would rather leave for other places than sign these kind of stupid details or these stupid deals. So yeah, this is a real low blow for a company that you already don't expect much out of them. So yeah, that leads to a really fun time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say to this. You know, obviously, our opinion of Valnet is not a high one. We sort of work through them because of OpenCritic, but there is really no benefit there. You know, maybe some of the traffic from our OpenCritic reviews get to us, but other than that, it's like, you know, it's just tough seeing them make all these just weird decisions and alienating everybody that gets involved with them. You know, a lot of our newer writers are here because of what Valnet has done to them, and it's unfortunate. Like, you know, I'm a freelancer myself, and they are one entity that I will never want to have any of my pieces on, just because of what I've heard from so many peers in the industry, a lot of them write for this site. So yeah, it is just really unfortunate. And, you know, I wish that I could do something to really help, aside from, you know, offer another place to have a byline. But at the same time, like, you know, we don't pay people. We're here for, you know, the passion and the fun of it. But just hearing about all of these situations when they affect a lot of our friends and our peers in the industry who are trying to make an honest living but can't, it sucks. And unfortunately, like, for people trying to get in, it's just something that I don't, you know, condone or really try to encourage people to do. Because if you're, you know, if you're doing what we do, it's because, you know, you love what you do. And at the end of the day, it's like we have our actual full-time jobs to also go back to, assuming that we do have them, because everything just sucks right now. And
yeah,
just looking at SEO in general, like, it's there are some guidelines we do follow just for discoverability. But at the same time, with all the advancements with Google AI, they've pretty much ruined any reason to even click on a site that even shows up on Google. So yeah, it's just not a fun situation to be around. At the same time, it is good to know this stuff. That way we can further continue to not support these people. But at the end of the day, it's like, I still want to be able to support my favorite writers. And aside from things like Patreon and things like that, I also don't know how, and it sucks.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
No, not really. Dan Riff pretty much nailed it. There ain't really much to add to that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, I think we're gonna end that there. There's really not much else to talk about. Just depressing to have that kind of thing happening there. So yeah, but yeah, we'll do that. That'll be it for the show. Thank you to Brandon and Dana for joining this week.
Always.
Yeah, we'll be back next weekend, which will be the weekend before Summer Game Fest. So that'll be fun to have the last show before we know about a lot more things that'll be coming out throughout this year and probably into next year as well. Get to see Jeff Keighley talk about random indie games on Steam that did well.
Yeah.
While a bunch of other games did not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to see what else is coming out this week. Yeah, there's Lumen Tail. 007 First Light is out this week. Weirdly enough, it's out basically tomorrow night, essentially, because if you pre-order it, you get 24-hour early access, so basically around the time that reviews might be going out for whoever got it, you'll be able to buy it anyway. It's not even one of those where you pay for an extra, you know, higher tier edition to get it. It's just the base edition, so that's at least the nice thing there. Let's see, yeah, Blue's Quest, and maybe My Little Puppy. I've not heard anything about that. I think that ended up getting delayed on the consoles. I could be wrong. Let me double check. No, seems like that might actually be happening for PS5 and Switch, so that'll be fun. That's a one game that looks nice, and then you find out the dog is in heaven. So it's a dead dog.
That's sad. Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
But it has a fun time in heaven. But yeah. Yeah, there you go. That is going to do it for the show this week. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. And select strangers that are also interested in seeing what new things they should be checking out later this year. But yeah, and then yeah, by the time we do the next show, we'll almost be in June. It'll be May 31st next Sunday, so that'll be fun. So yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye. Yeah.